Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFB podcast. Gracias for joining us. I'm Jorge Martin, and today I'm joined for a special interview with Vincent Bonsignore, the beat writer covering the Las Vegas Raiders for Raider Nation, the Las Vegas Review Journal. And he's also the host of the weekday show In the Huddle on Raider Nation Radio. Vinny B, you know, it's such a pleasure to have you on the podcast to talk with someone who's, you know, it's great to talk with someone who's on the ground with the Raiders. Bienvenidos, my friend.
Thank you so much, Jorge. We go back a long way, obviously. Good friends, crossed paths many, many times. Happy to do this. I'm proud of your success. Happy for your success. And I can just tell the listeners, listen to this guy. He knows what he's talking about.
Oh, the check's in the mail, my friend. Thank you. Gracias, gracias. Well, obviously, this is what we're dealing with now. I mean, this is going to be your first year, first complete year on the beat with the Raiders. I know you finished the season last year after covering the Rams for a couple seasons for The Athletic. Obviously, this is like no other training camp that we've ever seen. But what can you give a snapshot of what it's like?
Well, it's different. There's no question about it. Just to kind of pull the curtain back a little bit, you know, I mean, I get tested every day. Let's put it that way. I get tested for COVID every day. You have to before you're allowed entrance into the team facility. And going out onto the practice field, I have to wear a tracker, you know, that tracks everywhere I go when I'm there in Henderson at the Raiders facility. Because they want to, if something, God forbid, was supposed to happen, then they would know who I got into contact with, because we're all wearing the same thing. We're all wearing the same tracking device. So, obviously that's something that's completely foreign to all of us. I have to get my temperature taken every time that I come into the facility, whether it's to the parking lot and into the media workroom. It's just constant evaluation to make sure that we're all safe and sound, and, you know, even more importantly, not carrying something that's going to affect an entire organization. And I actually, you know, I want to say this, that I applaud the NFL, I applaud the Raiders for leaving no stone unturned in terms of trying to protect everybody. There's no guarantees, obviously. COVID-19 has a mind of its own, but they're doing everything that they can to protect the players and protect everyone that's involved. And in particular, John Gruden, I give him so much credit, because throughout the offseason, talking to him, and especially now during training camp, the message he's always conveyed, even just to me, that he was conveying to his players was, we need to crush this virus. It's an opponent that he says the Raiders play on a daily basis 24/7, and the object is to kill it off, to squash it, to crush it, to dominate it. Those are the words that he uses to his team, to anyone who will listen. And we need to do it by, you know, adhering to all requirements and wearing a mask and social distancing and listening to the experts. That's the way that we're going to dominate this. And it's just really interesting to me, not to get all political or anything like that, but I just wish we had a leader that had taken the reins like that from the very beginning and saying, here, look, here's the game plan. This is what we have to do. This is the opponent. This terrible virus is what we have to do to try to beat it. Again, no guarantees, but by following the instructions and listening to the experts, we'll give ourselves half a chance. And if you look at the numbers in the NFL, you know, with the COVID-19 testing, it's far below the national average. And to me, there's no coincidence. It's because people are doing what they're supposed to be doing in terms of the social distancing and all the protocols and requirements. And maybe had we all done that from the very beginning, our leaders included, you know, maybe we'd be further along with that. But that's my little political rant right there. But it's really interesting and encouraging looking at these numbers and the approach by some of these teams, John Gruden included.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I don't think there's been any recorded positive tests since any new tests, or I guess.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Well, that's good. People are adhering. I guess they're learning some of the lessons that are of what's been happening on the MLB side. So
yeah, that's exactly. People are heeding all of that. Trust me, the Marlins and the Cardinals are a topic of conversation in the NFL. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, we learn, right? We learn from the good, and sometimes we learn from the bad or the mistakes. I don't think anyone intentionally did anything bad with the Cardinals or the Marlins. They kind of let their guard down, maybe. But trust me, coaches and general managers across the NFL are saying, hey, look, you let your guard down, and this is what can happen. This is why we're being as adamant as we are about the protocols and the requirements and heeding all of the advice. This can happen, and if that happens, it's a catastrophe, and it can threaten our season, and more importantly, it can threaten lives. That's the other part of it, you know, and so the leadership in place from coaches and also veteran players who are, you know, sharing that with younger players on how to be, because keep in mind, football, there's no bubble in football. You go home at the end of the day, you know, right now included. The rookies, some rookies are staying in a hotel here in Las Vegas, but otherwise everyone's going home, and it's those moments, it's that time of, you know, when you leave work, where, as John Gruden said, we have to dominate away from the facility. We have to dominate that time of day in order to squash this whole thing.
Yeah, and having heard him talk enough, he says anything, I'm doing it twice.
Exactly.
Now, I mean, your job as a beat writer is about access to players. How different is this, you know, getting these interviews all via Zoom?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not ideal, obviously, but I think we've all taken the philosophy that, hey, that we're all in this together, and so we'll all make the best of it. Fortunately, I have some, you know, some relationships with some players and coaches, and, you know, you're able to kind of, you know, be able to reach out in other means sometimes, just to be able to pick their brain on something if you saw something in practice or whatever. But, you know, guys have been pretty obliging about that. Not looking for the scoop or anything like that. You know, you're just trying to give your readers an accurate account of what's going on. And so those type of relationships are really important, and they're going to get more important as the season goes on.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, let's get into some of the training camp news, and it'd be great to get kind of like a firsthand account. You know, this being a fantasy football podcast, one of the things that really sent ripples around in the first couple weeks is when Josh Jacobs said he wanted to catch 60 passes this year, and a lot of people have been tempering their enthusiasm for Josh Jacobs, and all of a sudden they're talking about that was. You know, there's been some talk that maybe he was held back because of the shoulder injury from catching more balls. What is that something that could be increased in his usage this year?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And if you look at John Gruden's track record, there's been cases where he's got running backs that catch a lot of balls and you know, gain a lot of yards on the ground. So you know, a role similar like that for Josh Jacobs. You know, it is possible. Now, on the other hand, he's already kind of in that whole workload management program type thing going on. You know, and it's not because he's hurt or anything like that. He's not. He's completely healthy. But the Raiders last year lost him for three of the last four games of the year, and it really kind of the wheels kind of fell off as a result of that. That and their offensive line suffered a whole bunch of injuries. And I think that John Gruden and the staff understand that we can't have that happen again. Again, no guarantees, but what they want to try to do is manage things from right now all the way through the rest of the season in order to keep, you know, Josh Jacobs healthy and vibrant from week one to week 16, because they do have aspirations of potentially making a playoff run. How do you do that? How do you best position yourself to do that is being as healthy as you possibly can be. So the question I have is, because you're going to see that reflected sometimes in some practice schedules. Josh has missed a few practices to be working, you know, indoors, weight room, pool work, conditioning type stuff. So they're giving him some days off already in training camp. Likewise with Trent Brown, their big offensive tackle. I just wonder how that's going to affect in games. We saw in Los Angeles with Todd Gurley that it doesn't work well. When you're literally trying to work load management, one of your best players in game, and saying, look, you know, we're not going to go over this many carries in a game. It doesn't work. You have to use your star players accordingly. And so, I think that Josh is going to get just as many carries, if not more, especially if he plays, you know, a full season. He didn't have that luxury last year, but if he does, the numbers are going to be up running-wise, you know, yard-wise and touch-wise. I'm just wondering how it's going to be reflected in the pass game. Is that where you cut a corner maybe to try to preserve him a little bit more by maybe not using him as much in the pass game and go into like a rookie Lynn Bowden Jr. who's really good at catching passes. Mm-hmm. He played wide receiver at Kentucky, a little bit of quarterback as well. You also have Jalen Richard, who's a good third down back and good at getting the ball out of the backfield. So is that where you in game try to limit or try to manage Josh a little bit by not necessarily using him as much in the pass game? I don't know the answer to that, and I'm really anxious to find out, because I think if you do use him in that area, the offense, I think it will go to another level, because I think him in space and getting him in the ball in space like that, with knowing the type of runner that he is, kind of like Todd Gurley, mm-hmm. when the Rams started using him in the pass game, his game went to a whole other level. He became an MVP candidate. Would the Raiders be inclined to do that with Josh Jacobs? I think there's a part of John Gruden that really wants to investigate that a little bit. So 60 catches, though, I don't know about that. That's a lot of catches.
I know. I think one of the things we learned a lot of times, it's one thing for the players to say something, and the reality is oftentimes a little bit different. But
yes,
Derek Carr, how did you feel like the fit was with Gruden? I think that last year was the second year. He ended up with some really good numbers, and the fantasy community has talked about, they want to see him take more shots. But, when you got a quarterback who's completing 70% of his passes, how important is he to this, to this offense? And do you see him as being like a great fit to what, Gruden wants to do?
I do, actually. And, it's interesting when you talk about Derek Carr and John Gruden. I think the assumption nationally was when John Gruden took over the Raiders, and knowing his history with quarterbacks, I think the first person that people thought was going to be out of town and out of a job was Derek Carr, because John Gruden was going to automatically come into Oakland and the Raiders and switch quarterbacks, because that's what he does, right? Well, 3 years later, three drafts have gone by, three off-season free agency periods have gone by. They've traded Khalil Mack. They traded Amari Cooper. The one guy that everyone thought was on the way out of town automatically is still standing. He's still here, and that's Derek Carr. And that tells you something. It tells you that John Gruden likes Derek Carr, and I think he is a good fit for this offense. And, I've had a chance to talk to Derek, during training camp, and some interesting conversation about where he is mentally, third year in John Gruden's system, third year with the same offense coordinator. He's never had that stability, that continuity in his career. It's always been, just different head coaches, different offensive philosophies, a roster that has been in upheaval throughout his 6 years. I hate to say that he's the victim of all that, but he's definitely in some ways the product of all that. His play has reflected kind of the dysfunction that has happened in with the Raiders. But you look at the roster now and the work that John Gruden and Mike Mayock have done putting it together. Like I mentioned, Derek Carr, has survived the purge, but you look everywhere else and it's Josh Jacobs, Darren Waller, Hunter Renfro, Henry Ruggs, Brian Edwards, Terrell Williams, one of the best offensive lines in the league. Pro Football Focus literally has the Raiders' offensive line the best in the league going into this season. You've got a rebuilt defense. There's a lot of components and elements to this team that make it a full team that Derek just has never had to work with the Raiders. It's been one thing or another. It's a bad offensive line, no running game. Last year, Antonio Brown left a gaping hole at a wide receiver position, right? It's always been something for Derek Carr. But now I think, and he understands this, and I've talked to him about this, about how, he comes out of the huddle now. He's like, I look left and I see that guy. I look to my right, I see that guy. Behind me is Josh Jacobs. In front of me is this great offensive line. We feel like we can, if you're going to take this away from us, I could turn to this. Sometimes I could just take what I want because there's so much great talent around, at hand now. And it's a different, Derek Carr never talked like that in the past. you know, because he never, I don't think he had the confidence to talk like that, because he took an honest look at the situation and the talent just wasn't there, right? So he feels it is now, and a lot of people are saying, well, he's acting like a more confident quarterback. I can assure everyone, Derek Carr's confidence never wavered in himself. He always had confidence in himself. I think what's changed is he has a lot more confidence now in the possibility, at least, and potential that he has around him. And I saw it in practice at Allegiant Stadium when the Raiders were practicing at Allegiant Stadium, a play where he was getting ready to just chuck it long to Henry Ruggs and take that chance. Well, lo and behold, he had to dump it off, okay? And I know Raider fans get mad at that sometimes because he has done that. But the reason why, and I was watching the whole sequence, he wanted to throw long to Henry Ruggs. Something happened with the pattern, and I think Henry Ruggs just made a mistake. So coming off the field, because it was first-team offense, the first-team offense is coming off the field, Derek Carr is looking at the wide receiver coach, basically saying, hey, can you go talk to Henry and talk to John Gruden? Can you talk to Henry? And then John Gruden went over there and talked to Henry Ruggs. And then all three of them, Henry Ruggs, you know, Derek Carr, John Gruden, all talked together, you know, and it was kind of animated, not in a bad way, but, you know, in an instructional way. And with everyone, you know, fist bumps all around and, okay, I got you. But my point is that, whereas Derek Carr, I think, was reluctant to throw the ball downfield because he just didn't feel like he had the talent around him, a deep ball threat to throw to confidently, I think you're going to see the complete opposite this year. I think you're going to see a quarterback that's confident in throwing it downfield. He wanted to on that play. It's just that his wide receiver, a young wide receiver, just probably made a mistake. But I think you're going to see what looks to be a more confident Derek Carr. But in reality, it's just a Derek Carr that is more confident in the talent around him.
Well, let's talk about that talent around him. I mean, obviously, after the NFL draft, you know, you add a Henry Ruggs as the first wide receiver taken off the board. You get a Bryan Edwards, who's getting a lot of talk. Lynn Bowden Jr., who you mentioned earlier, who could be, you know, kind of like a hybrid type of player out there. And you're bringing back Hunter Renfrow, who was just quietly a great player in the slot last year. And you still have Tyrell Williams. Can you give us kind of like a how is one alpha male gonna kind of rise? Do you think one can, or is this gonna be a lot of guys getting a few balls? And this week it'll be your turn. Or how do you see the wide receiver group breaking out?
Jorge, if I had a nickel for every time I got that exact question going into a Rams week, let's say, you know, there would be a fantasy show that, you know, a fantasy question from a fan that I would get, you know, how fans hit you up on Twitter and whatnot, like, who should I start? Yeah, and my answer then, and I have a feeling it's going to be the same thing, it could be Cooper Kupp, it could be Robert Woods, it could be Brandon Cooks, it could be Todd Gurley's week, you know, with the Rams. Because that's the way the offense was structured, and there were a lot of just unselfish players who understood that, and they were cool with that. And at the end of the year, if you looked at everyone's numbers, they were great, right? Yeah. Cooper Kupp, when he was healthy, and Robert Woods, and Brandon Cooks, and Todd Gurley, obviously. And you had this point guard of a quarterback in Jared Goff who distributed the ball to the open man. He went where it was supposed to go. Well, I think you're going to see something similar with the Raiders, and Derek Carr is kind of like that point guard quarterback where he's going to go to the open man. And I think that it could change. It's all going to be matchup related and who the opposing defense is, who they're playing against, and what's the matchup that we're going to exploit. And just like you saw in Los Angeles with the Rams, where one, it would be Cooper Kupp going for 10 catches and 116 yards. The next week it was Robert Woods going for 9 catches and 117 yards. And on and on and on and on, and yet at the end of the year, they all have close to 1,000 yards, if not 1,000 yards, and everyone got their numbers. Somehow, some way, it all worked out, you know, even though on a game-to-game basis, it was different. So alpha male, I don't know. I think in John Gruden's system, and again, I talked to Derek Carr about this just the other day, as far as how, and he gave me, if you have time, I could give you a little quick story about how, he goes, so I get to the line of scrimmage, and I have the play from John, and it's an 11-on-11 with first-team offense, first-team defense. I immediately get to the line of scrimmage. I see what defense is, you know, the scheme and how they're lined up, and I automatically go to the to the play that I know I'm supposed to go to audible to. And got out of the original play, get into the new play. It goes for a nice gain. We get a first down out of it. He goes, and I turn around, and walking back in training camp and practices, the coaches are behind you, right? You know, they're watching things from behind the line of scrimmage. And so Derek Carr says, I turn around, and there's John Gruden looking at me with a big smile on his face. And he's like, you saw exactly what I saw. I would have done the same exact thing if I was a quarterback. And, you know, Derek was like, it was a small little victory, but it was meaningful because that's what John wants you to do. He termed it as kind of being a robot, but not in a bad way, not like you're robotic and you're just doing what the coach says. It's anything but, actually. It's being able to robotically see, okay, that's the defense, this is the play, but I got switched to this play, and just do it, like, in quick fashion. And what Derek is saying is, I'm seeing it now in year three so much faster, and being able to boom, 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 at the line of scrimmage and manage it at the line of scrimmage. And again, I'm saying that to say this. I don't think it's going to be one dominant player every game. I think it's going to be so matchup-oriented, with Derek having such a command of this offense, that I think he's going to manage games there at the line of scrimmage. And it could be Hunter Renfrow, who, don't sleep on Hunter Renfrow. That's somebody that Derek really, really trusts. And I think they're going to try to carve out what I've been told this offseason is kind of a Julian Edelman type of a role for Hunter Renfrow. He's much more than just a possession wide receiver. That guy is a sneaky athlete with good instincts when he has the ball. He has a knack for picking up extra yards when the ball is in his hand. So I think you're going to see, you know, him prominent, but everyone else too. I think Henry Ruggs is going to have his role, and whether it's Brian Edwards or Terrell Williams, they're going to get their touches. And of course, you know, Josh Jacobs will get his as well. So hard to say that there's one dominant. I think it's going to be a collective effort, kind of like it was with the Rams.
The rookies, though, are you seeing a learning curve with Ruggs and Edwards?
Yeah, I mean, the practice at Allegiant Stadium was a perfect example where, you know, something happened on that pass pattern. They were right. Going to go long with Henry Ruggs. So you saw that there. Derek talked about, he told me about a situation with Brian Edwards where, a play didn't work out, and he was kind of mad about it, you know, and he let Brian Edwards know about it in the huddle. He goes, but the very next play, he completely picked it up and did it perfectly, and we hit on a long pass. So it was like, and the coaches are talking about this too with these young guys, they're really smart, and they care about football, and they make a mistake, of course that's going to happen. But they immediately correct it. And I think that, when you talk about a Henry Ruggs coming from a Nick Saban system and environment and everything like that, where so much emphasis is put up, you know, above the head, not just the physical part of the game. And he's already brought that conscientiousness, you can tell, to the NFL. So there is a learning curve. There always is for rookies. But I think the guys that they've targeted and brought in, especially Ruggs and Brian Edwards, whatever mistakes that they make, they're going to quickly move on from, be better off for it, and learn and grow and prosper. And I think that the adjustment's not going to be that long. Not going to take that long.
Oh, that's fantastic. And actually, I was going to ask you about Hunter Renfrow, but you already said not to sleep on him. And
don't sleep on Hunter.
When you said that, I immediately thought of the Julian Edelman comp. So, so great minds. One pass catcher who just, you know, who really came out of nowhere last year, Darren Waller, even though in training camp, John Gruden was talking about how much he loves to use the tight end. Getting 90 catches for a tight end is a big number. Can you see him making a repeat?
Well, and that's a very interesting question because, you got to give John Gruden a lot of credit for this. Once Antonio Brown fled the scene, it took an entire, you know, arm out of his offense, basically, an entire side of the playbook. And he needed to make that up somehow. The problem is he didn't have anyone nearly as good as Antonio Brown, not even close, to as the backup to put in that position. So it was just a wasteland almost, abyss at that position. So you got to figure it out on the fly. And what John Gruden did, to his credit, was like, you know, the best player that I have offensively in the passing game is this kid, Darren Waller. And also keep in mind, Terrell Williams was battling some foot issues. Oh, yeah. So, that was an issue that they had to deal with. So, So for John Gruden, kind of on the fly, to run the offense, the passing game offense, basically through the 10 was a, kind of a genius coaching job. But I think the good news for him is I don't think he necessarily needs to do that this year, as long as Terrell Williams is healthy, Bryan Edwards is who he seemingly is in practice, and Henry Ruggs emerges. So it could be a case where the numbers go down, but the impact remains, just because, you know, there's more talent around him. But that will be interesting to see if he can replicate that. If he does, I'm not so sure that's a good sign for the Raiders offense. I'd have to see it at the end to see if that was the right way to, or if it was just because, again, they weren't getting production from other places and they just had to run it through Darren Waller. But the guy's a dynamite player, there's no doubt about it. And I think, you know, there might be a way to raise his impact even higher, even though the numbers might not be as big.
And you know, you touched on the offensive line earlier being one of the best in the league. And how much are they just kind of like an underrated hero in this team? Because to me, the winning football starts with the offensive line. You do not. I don't think there's a playoff team that gets there with a bad offensive line. How much are these guys the unsung heroes there?
Very much so, and you know, I think that especially in this kind of a weird, you know, offseason that we're dealing with, you know, it's the best situation possible for the Raiders to have that offensive line. It's a veteran offensive line when you're talking about Trent Brown, Richie Incognito, who, you know, I think that raised some eyebrows, but I got to say this, completely different than what you imagined him to be, for me anyway. And I talked to a lot of his teammates who are like, dude, he's nothing like we heard that he was going to be. So I don't know what the deal was, wherever else he was, but he's not that guy. At least he hasn't been with the Raiders. And you have him who still plays at a Pro Bowl caliber level. You know, and then you have, you know, Colton Miller, who grew last year, Rodney Hudson, Gabe Jackson. It's a really good offensive line, and they were really good last year. The problem was they were hurt. They got hurt. They lost 15 games among their starting defense. So, you know, that was an issue, obviously. But if they can stay healthy, this is an offensive line that's you know, good, and it's a veteran offensive line. And in a weird offseason where you didn't have any OTAs and limited time in training camp, that's probably the best case scenario to have an offensive line that you can rely on, intact, continuity, coming back. Now they just have to stay healthy.
Oh, that's awesome. Now you mentioned that you got a good look at Allegiant Stadium. Can you put into a few words what that stadium looks like and what fans can look forward to when they're allowed to go to games?
Well, yeah, it's beautiful, no question about it, and it's Raider-centric. There's no question whose stadium it is. I mean, it's distinctively Raiders, just by the colors and the feel of it from the outside and then obviously inside, and it's like, I try to describe it as if you were to put, you know, individual portraits of all the stadiums on a sheet of paper, pictures of all stadiums, and ask fans, okay, what team belongs to what stadium? It wouldn't take long for everyone to just go right to the Allegiant Stadium. Oh, that's the Raiders stadium, of course, because it just looks so much like the Raiders. It feels so much like the Raiders. It's beautiful, you know, and of course, coming from Oakland, unfortunately, you know, it's a different world than what they were dealing with in Oakland, or for that matter, the Coliseum when they were in L.A. So you have that. They created love for the Bay Area portion of their existence for their Los Angeles era, and of course here in Las Vegas. So a lot of homage being paid to their history and their tradition, which we all know is so incredible. So, but I think the thing that I'm trying to stress to Raider fans, wherever the Raider fans are come from, and they're all over, we all know that. You know, I think Mark Davis and his father before him, but in particular Mark Davis, they just wanted a home. You know, they feel like, you know, if they could call themselves the Raiders, they probably would. It doesn't matter to them, you know, the city and all that, that's obviously important. They love being here. Everything's worked out great. But they're the Raiders, and it's a Raider nation, and they come from all over. And all they ever wanted was a home, a worthy home for their fan base, for their franchise, to be able to, you know, use to tap into to revenue streams that all these new stadiums create for these owners to be able to put back into the team. They didn't have that luxury with Oakland. That's why they were always 30th and 31st in terms of revenue. That will change overnight once fans start becoming, you know, more of a part of it. So it's just a home that I think Raider Nation, whether you're here in Las Vegas or L.A. or Oakland or wherever you are, it's a home that I think the Raiders are going to be, all of their fans are going to be proud of. It really is beautiful, and I can't stress enough how distinctively Raiders it is.
I can't wait to get to a game there, because I got to tell you, it's I feel like, you know, with the Raiders moving to Vegas, it feels like I now have three teams in my home area. So yeah. I love it. Well, Vinny, I also as you mentioned a little bit about the your time covering the Rams, I wanted to throw in a couple Rams questions before we let you go.
Sure.
You know, first off, you know, Jared Goff in the fantasy community has gotten kind of hammered, and I think it's a little bit unfair. I keep telling people who are downgrading him, I say, look, what he did in 17 and 18, you don't fake that, and also you don't fake McVay being a good coach. What a great offensive mind. What were some of the things that you saw that that really kind of broke down for him, that are fixable, that could bring him back to success?
Well, and you know, kind of like with Derek Carr, sometimes you're you know, the product of what's happening around you. And last year was a very kind of a offensively dysfunctional year for the Rams. A couple of things that were out of their control that they tried to control. Todd Gurley being one of them. You know, I think they you know, coming off the year previously where, and let's think about this, in 2018, going into December, Todd Gurley was on pace to be Offensive Player of the Year, maybe even the MVP.
Yeah.
That year. He was playing so good. And then something happened, and it was against the Philadelphia Eagles at the Coliseum. I don't know what it was or what exactly happened, but he was never the same that year. And, you know, he missed the next couple of games. You know, they were able to win those games and get, you know, home field advantage up until, or get a bye week, and then, you know, be able to they got to the Super Bowl, but he was just never the same, and he's never been the same. And I don't know what it is. I have my suspicions, but, you know, I just don't, you know, I'm not going to speculate too much on that, but he just hasn't been the same. And I think the Rams tried to work around it last year by managing him, and which was fine when you're talking about practice, but when you go into a game, and whether, you know, Sean wanted to say it or not, I think he did a lot of protection for Todd Gurley. But if you look at the numbers, did he ever go more than 20 carries a game? I don't think he even got to 20. I'd have to look that up.
I don't think he did.
Yeah, which is crazy when you think about it. And so, you know, they were trying to manage him in games, and the whole point was, hey, let's make sure that he's healthy for down the stretch and into the playoffs, because that wasn't the case the year before. He just wasn't healthy. And so they were trying to keep him healthy, and they were trying to work around, obviously, some sort of an issue, which is all noble, and they tried to protect him as much as possible physically, his reputation, everything. But at the end of the day, what ended up happening was, you know, Sean McVay had to coach basically with one arm tied behind his back. Todd Gurley in that position was such a focal point and anchor for the success of that offense. If you go back to 2017 and go back to 2018 for most of that year, to take that away or to try to manage it or try to tell Sean, you know, hey, you can only really use him this many carries a game. Oh, man, it's just, you know, and then there were times where he was on the field and they weren't using him. And that's just like craziness. Now you're playing with 10 players almost, you know, so. It affected the Rams' entire offensive operation. It obviously affected Jared Goff because you don't have that weapon in your arsenal. So that was going on. But then you also had some offensive line issues, you know, because, you know, the Rams had to make some hard decisions. Roger Saffold, they couldn't retain him. That was a huge loss at left guard last year. He was, you think about that offensive line, those first couple, 17 and 18, that was intact. There was continuity. They were able to miraculously stay healthy for both of those years. And, you know, Jared Goff was protected, well protected. And that's what he needs. Any good quarterback needs that, especially him. He just needs to be protected. So you had that going on as well. So there were a lot of factors that were kind of conspiring against Jared Goff last year that were a little bit out of his control. I think if you get back to a better offensive line, which toward the end of the year there was, mm-hmm. and his play started picking up a little bit, you know, they got to figure out, you know, how they're going to distribute the ball at their running back position. Could be by committee, and that's fine. If you're doing it by committee, that's okay, as long as you're not neglecting the run game. The problem last year, again, there were times where Todd Gurley was on the field and they weren't giving him the ball. He was just a decoy out there. You can't have that. You can't ask Sean McVay to do that again. And, you know, it looks like they're beyond all of that. So I think if you give him a good running game and protect him, he's going to be fine. He'll be fine, Jared Goff.
Well, speaking of running game, it looks like it's going to be, I know McVay mentioned, you know, running back by committee, which fantasy owners always cringe at and want to run for the hills. But I really think this is a two-man competition between Akers and Cam Akers and Daryl Henderson. You got to see Henderson up close last year. I mean, how could you see one, because McVay does like to have one guy be the guy, especially when it's Todd Gurley. Can you see one of these two maybe taking the lead?
Yeah, and I think it'll be up to either one of those guys to do that. Cam Akers, to me, is a perfect fit for what they're trying to do in the run game now. Daryl Henderson, I could just tell people, like, you know, that was another case where, why is Sean McVay neglecting Daryl Henderson? Well, there were some injury factors going on with Daryl Henderson. And the weird thing is, and I remember, you know, I shared a flight with a former Rams coach going to, I think it was a Senior Bowl, and that was like the first I had heard what was really going on, okay, that he had been banged up. And the coaches tell me, the weird thing is he never had any kind of track record for an injury. And there were like two games. They had put him in prominently in the game plan twice last year. And both times he got hurt early in the game. Like, it weren't major injuries by any stretch. They were just enough to just, oh, man, you know, now we can't use him the way we had planned all week to use him. And they could have, you know, both instances could have been, you know, built to momentum, been his kind of coming out party. But because he gets hurt, now, you know, that you can't use him. So it wasn't that they didn't want to use him. They actually did. It's just that he was unfortunate with getting banged up a little bit. So if he could stay away from injuries, he's definitely a home run hitter. He's got the talent. He's a good zone read runner, and that's what Rams like to do. So I think if he's healthy, he's got a chance to you know, make his mark. Now, that said, Cam Akers is pretty good too, and I know they have a high hopes for him with the Rams. So I think it's going to be by committee for the most part. But I think by the end of the year, I think one of those running backs will emerge as, you know, more of a guy than just a secondary, than just a shared guy.
Awesome. Well, Vinny, I can't tell you how much I appreciate this, to get this insight from, you know, someone boots on the ground with two teams in the last several years. Can you give us a little bit about where people can find your work?
Well, the Las Vegas Review Journal, you can go online to the reviewjournal.com, sports, pretty much every day there. And then, of course, Raider Nation Radio. And you can find us in podcast form. You can listen live. The Raiders stream it if you're out of town at Raiders.com. There's also the Las Vegas Sports Network platform if you want to listen and stream it live. If you're here in Las Vegas, it's 9:20 a.m. Raider Nation Radio. There's also Las Vegas SportsNetwork.com that you can listen to. It's on podcast. And the Raiders.com also streams it live. In the Huddle with Vinny Monsignor, 4 to 6 live, but you can listen to it all sorts of different platforms as well.
Awesome. And we'll put this in the show notes, but you can also find him on Twitter at Vinny Bonsignor. In Spanish, es un placer. Thank you. I can't thank you enough for doing this. And definitely keep an eye out for him, folks in Raider Nation. You guys got yourself a good one. He's awesome. He's going to give you definitely a great coverage, and he's going to be a credit to Raider Nation himself. He's going to keep you guys informed. Bueno, eso es todo for our show. Thanks again to Vinny B. For getting the great insight on the Raiders. Thanks again to Anchor.fm for being our hosting network and for making sure our independent podcast gets out into the Familia community. Please subscribe and leave us a review at Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at FamiliaFFB, as well as our Familia FFB Facebook page. Gracias, and remember, todos somos familia.